Welcome to Top Advisor Marketing, where you will learn how to become a prolific online influencer, attract more ideal clients, and grow your practice. Brought to you by Top Advisor Podcasting, a done-for-you podcasting solution built just for trusted advisors. And now, your co-hosts of Top Advisor Marketing, Kirk Lowe and Matt Halloran.
Hello and welcome to another Top Advisor Marketing Podcast. Today, we are going to ask Kirk Lowe the question of all questions. You might not like the answer to this, and when you reflect on the different categories that Kirk is going to go over today, it might wake you up to realize that you might not be brand worthy. Kirk and our whole branding team asks very specific questions of financial services professionals over and over again, and sometimes they're not doing stuff that's brand worthy, and then there's times that they are, and we're going to break that down today. So Kirk, welcome back to the show, man.
Thank you, Matt. Great introduction.
Thanks.
This is a very, it's a significant topic. It's one we don't actually talk to about to advisors about very often, though.
No, I'm super excited about this, as I usually am, because I freaking love podcasting. But I love that you're going to talk about this because it is the wake-up call, right? It is something that advisors really need to take a look at, because they come to us thinking that a lot of times we're going to be this, you know, this panacea, this wonderful opportunity for them to really grow their business. And once we ask them questions, we just realize, not to be mean, but you really don't have anything unique. So let's break this down right at the beginning. What is the first?
Actually, before we start, I'm thinking there's probably people are thinking, how can you as a branding company and expert not jump into, are you actually worthy of a brand? And the truth is that we seem to attract advisors who are absolutely brand worthy.
Oh, totally.
They typically been in the business. They know they have something, and they just haven't been able to articulate it. And it's just extracting it from them. And so we dive right into extracting. And if we're in the middle of extracting and they don't have anything, we can have those conversations about, you know, you might want to think about this or that. But our job is not to determine whether they are brand worthy. It's to determine how and where their brand lies within them. So this is a little bit different, and I hope it's going to be eye-opening for lots of advisors. There's going to be advisors nodding their heads up and down saying, I got this stuff. This is great confirmation that I've got lots of good stuff going on. And for other advisors, it's going to be maybe confirmation that they're not quite there yet, and they need to continue to work on how brand worthy they are. So we'll dive in.
What are the initial lines of questions that you ask?
Yeah. So I'm going to break it down into four sections. I'll tell those in advance. Is that okay? There's the four areas. And the four areas are marketable, replicatable, enjoyable, and sustainable. And we're going to kick it off with marketable. So what I want to ask you or to ask yourself is your value marketable? And the first thing you want to, I've got five questions here. Actually more than that as we do some drill downs, but does your value, what you do, resonate with your ideal audience? And that's like one of the most important things that we get to in discovery is who is your ideal audience? What do you do for people? And do they care enough that it can become a brand? So your value has got to resonate with your audience. That is utterly critical.
Fair. Example. Give us an example.
Well, if you're going after an ultra affluent audience and you don't have a powerful, if you're just going after ultra affluent audience because they have a lot of money and you make bigger commissions or paycheck, whatever you want to call it, but you don't actually offer them more value that beats out, you know, and if you're not doing things that they're going to solve the things in their life. Like if you solve one small thing, you got to realize that somebody that's ultra affluent has multiple problems. They have way more complex financial situations. Typically, if you can't solve all those things, that's going to be a problem. And we tend to work with advisors who are going after that audience. They can back it up with some incredible, it's not always been that way with the people we've worked with, but over the last couple of years, it's increasingly, we're seeing advisors who are at the top of the food chain as far as the value that they offer and knowing and understanding their audience. And we just take them to another level, of course. But that's a big deal. Is that a good enough example, or
That's a fantastic. No, that's a great example. Okay, so what else do we dive into here?
The second one is, are you actually better than your competition? I can tell you that 95% of the advisors that I've worked with over 18 years think that they're better than the people next door. And I know that can't be true for everybody, but you really need to look at yourself, look in the mirror, assess your business and say, am I actually better than my competition? So you need to understand where do you stand? Like, where do you stand as far as your service offering, the quality of advice you're giving, the reporting, the client experience, all those things, you know, and then look at, you know, what are your strengths? I'm really bad at the client experience, but I'm really good at value of and financial planning, the reporting, all that kind of stuff. And the strategies, I'm great at that. So understand what your strengths are, understand where you stand, and look at what and where the opportunities lie. What opportunities are in front of you that maybe you always wanted to go for and haven't? What are some of the things that you've done that were way more successful than others? It could, you know, for some advisors, sometimes they want to go after this ultra fluid audience because they hear and read about advisors who are doing that. But the truth is they're really great when they work with retiring employees from big companies, and they have a couple of those, and it's like it's right in front of them and they don't get it. You know, when you're a niche, you know, I've said this many, many times on our podcast, you can create way more value and you can own a niche. It's a lot easier to be successful that way than it is to try to be everything to everybody and just you don't even know who you are. And are you brand worthy? This whole podcast is about understanding that dynamic of, you know, is niching, you know, where's the value in it? This supports that whole idea. It should in your mind when we're done. It's not the point of the podcast, but it should be obvious. So what and where are the opportunities? Have stuff in front of you, you know, look at your book of business, you know, segment your practice. I know that you've been doing that, helping advisors do that for years and when you were in your coaching practice. Those are really critical things. So understand the opportunities. And the last one for this, you know, better track that we're on here, are you actually better than your competition, is what can you build? What kind of business model do you have? What kind of business model could you build? You know, is it an ensemble model? Is it a bunch of advisors? Is it a solo practice? You know, what can you build that would add more value? And what's the client, what kind of client experience can you build? So there's, you know, to actually be better. So think about those things. The other one, another question, and this is the third under, is your value marketable? The third is, do you truly understand your audience? There's a lot of advisors that I've met over the years that say they know their audience, and they can't possibly know their audience that intimately because they're working with way too many different types of people. An audience isn't, you know, somebody with 750,000 in assets or more, or somebody who's affluent, right? Or over a million, you know, it doesn't work that way. So you have to truly understand the psychographic, the demographics, and then obviously, most importantly, probably the psychographics of your audience. If you truly understand them, you're way better positioned to serve them and to create more value in your business. And that's a huge point of differentiation and a huge success factor for advisors.
You know, on that point right there, language is one of the things that I always used previously in the coaching business to really find out if they did understand their audience. I would ask them, what are some of the language specific things that your niche or that your ideal client would want you to know? And it's funny because Kirk, a lot of them could not answer that question. You know, even asking simple questions like, you know, where do they hang out? You know, what are their hobbies? What are the things that this group of people generally really likes? When you tease that stuff out and make them start thinking about it, it just really changes their perspective on if they truly understand. I could want to work with those group of people, but if I don't communicate to them in their language, you're dead in the water before you even start.
Absolutely. There's so many critical things to understand about your business and about yourself and about where you want to go. And hopefully this will give people some good insight into taking those really important steps. So the fourth question under is your value marketable is, what expertise and wisdom do you have to share with your audience that proves your brand? So if you just like proves your strength, for instance, or that you know your audience, like what can you put out there and are you capable of putting out there that's going to prove that you indeed know your audience and that you are and that you do offer this extra value? And that's a big question. And a lot of advisors that we talk to are prepared to go out and do that. And they are calling us about doing podcasting, for instance. So they want to put that out there. A lot of people do not want to write blogs because they don't enjoy that. But a lot of people are excited about the idea of podcasting. And that's one of those things. If you don't have expertise and wisdom to share that your audience is going to eat up, then it could be that your brand is not worthy, that you're not brand worthy.
All right. I'm going to force you for an example there, Kirk. Give us an example of expertise and wisdom. Or wisdom, I should say, not expertise and wisdom.
Yeah. This is a great question. And this came up recently. An advisor who is so focused on investing only, in my experience, does not typically have the kind of expertise and wisdom that would separate them, because it's much more of a commodity these days. And that can be a problem for advisors. Advisors who are focused on and really good and enjoy the investment side of the business might not be as in tune with the relationship side of the business and the strategic side of the business and all the other things that go into making somebody successful as far as their financial planning goes, right? Taxes, legacy, goals, dreams, or utilization, all those risk protection. And they often claim that they can achieve those, but they're so focused on one area that is more commoditized that it becomes very difficult for them to be brand worthy because they know something that is more or less commoditized these days. So there's going to be advisors who argue with me because they have a better widget for investing or a better experience with how they set it up and sell it. But that's a pretty good example of where that can be a problem.
So what's the last one here? Is the question that you need to ask about, is your value marketable?
Is what strength and advantage can you compete on? Like if you're really good at investment stuff, how do you compete on that? Right. And that may be a strength or do you have an advantage that you can, sometimes people have advantages. Sometimes people have family connections in a community that drive their business or could drive their business. So they're not leveraging or exploiting, if you will. So, think about what strength or advantage that you have or exists in your world that you can compete on. If you don't have a strength or an advantage, you're less brand worthy. And that's it for the marketable side. I mean, that was grueling probably to listen to because there were five big questions and there were some drill down questions. But the questions are, does it resonate with your ideal audience? Are you actually better than your competition? Do you truly understand your audience? What expertise or wisdom do you have to share with your audience that proves your brand? And what strength or advantage can you compete on?
All right. First off, if that was grueling for anybody, then they really need to go back and listen to it, because you should be able to answer these questions quickly and easily if you are truly brand worthy. If you're not, write the questions down. In fact, we'll make sure that these get into the show notes, maybe even a link to the mind map, because we want to make sure that you all have the opportunity. A brand is what makes the difference. It allows you to communicate all of these things that Kirk's going to talk about today in a manner that you don't always have to say it because your brand communicates it specifically. Okay, so we just talked about marketable. What's the second one?
The second one is your business replicatable, or your relationships, or your value, those things. So can you actually replicate what you do best? So this is a little more narrow focus, less questions, I guess. What processes do you have in place that add more value? What can you do and replicate that adds more value to the outcomes that your audience are going to have, to the relationship, to the client experience? What do you have? And that could be your financial planning process, could be your financial philosophy, could be your life philosophy. It could be your connection. It could be operations. Sorry. Could be, we're so smooth how we run things. There's, I'm sure you can think of some processes in business as well.
Well, I'm struggling with that a little bit, to be honest, because you just covered most of what we always deal with. And I would really challenge our listeners to say, if you fall into those categories, yes, you can be brandable and we can help bring that process out, diagram, explain the process and make sure that that's something that we can use in your brand. But what we're really looking for and what the industry is screaming for right now is for something truly unique and different. You know, Kirk, I hear this all the time. It's the service that I provide. That's what's replicatable, right? That's what's marketable. That's what I do very, very differently. And then when we ask that next level question, which is, what is that? What is client service? And what you think is client service, do your clients think that that's of value too? Because this is a two-part equation with what Kirk's talking about. Let's say, Kirk, I love the operations aspect of it, right? So your operations are swimmingly awesome, right? No re-signing paperwork. It's done very, very cleanly. It's very clear. Is that replicatable? Absolutely. Is that something that you can market? I don't know, man. I don't know if that's really going to separate you from the advisor down the street.
Let me give you an example. We've been working, Doug and I have been working on a brand for a company, and this is one of the more interesting, I'm going to say advisors just generically, but I don't know if we could put him into that category based on how he's doing things, but how he approaches this business and how he, the value he provides clients. Let's just put it this way. He has four levels of, we'll just call them services because that'll be easy for us to all to visualize in our minds. And the first level of service is what most people do. That's his baseline. Then he takes them into these other areas that are above comprehensive. So comprehensive financial planning in the true sense is level one. And then he takes the client experience goes three levels higher than that. I know that you're thinking, well, what else could you be doing? Who is this? You know what I mean? Who is this person? What are they doing? And it's all about relationships and the pursuit of something better in your life and your wealth. That's the three levels above that. That's all I can say. But just think about that as a financial advisor, that the entry level is a level of comprehensive planning that most advisors never get to. And that's level one for this advisor.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what is coming out. That is changing. This person's trying to change how people view and experience and what they get out of their money, which is the money is like a small part of it. It's incredible. And advisors need to find out in their own world. So where do I add value? What am I really doing for these people? And if I want to make it so that I can't be replaced as a human advice giving being, what do I need to do to be better at that? And all those things will make you more brand worthy. Absolutely.
Well, I like, because we, you know, you titled this section replicatable and it could also be replaceable. Right. Does your brand make it so that you are truly irreplaceable? Now, you have another subtopic underneath this. Can you replicate what you do best? So let's get a little bit more granular with where you're going with this.
Yeah. So does your audience have similar issues in that you can create more value knowing them? And so here I'll give you an example to help this make this consumable, I guess, or understandable. Imagine an advisor who only works with professional athletes, and then an advisor who works with all kinds of clients and has two professional athletes. Do you think it's even remotely possible that the person works with a whole bunch or only professional athletes? Do you think it's possible that the person working with only a couple of athletes in a much larger client base can do the same kind of job or offer the same amount of value as a person who only works with professional athletes? And the answer would be not a chance. And that's where the idea of being able to replicate what you know and what you do for somebody and create so much value that is very difficult. And here's another way to look at that. If in 5 years you decided you wanted to be that advisor that only works with professional athletes because now you went from two to four over a couple year period, do you think you're going to be able to compete with the person who's been doing it for 5 years while you were not doing it, while you were dabbling? Do you think you're going to be able to catch them?
Nope.
The answer is no. Yeah. It's going to be difficult. So when you think about niching, get on your niche quick so that other people can't replicate it. It's the same. We talked about this with our podcast. Mm-hmm. When you get to podcast number 50 and somebody else says, oh, I'm going to be a podcaster, they're going to have to get to 50 before they're at your level. And guess what? It's going to take them that much time. They can't, when you're ahead of the game, content wise, thought leadership wise, it's going to take them the same amount of time to get to where you are, unless they spend way, way more money. And we know that typically that does not happen in financial services. So the sooner you get to who you're going to be, the more advantages you're going to have. And there should be a massive race to creating brands and thought leadership in this industry. And the race is, it's happening, but it's not happening to the extent that it should, in my opinion.
Well, and I absolutely agree. When I'm going through the sales or educational process that we have talking about our podcasting and social division, one of the first questions that I ask is, what do you do that's uniquely different? And I just had a conversation with an advisor a couple of days ago who is doing something truly unique and different. And her question to me was, Matt, or do you have anybody who's doing that as a podcast right now? And I said, no, but I guarantee you sooner rather than later, somebody's going to run into that space. If you have something that is unique and different, and if you truly believe that you can answer the questions that Kirk's talking about, it's not just, you know, getting your brand under control, or maybe you already have your brand in a position where you can do all of these things. But we also find when people are working with us with podcasting specifically, that they start uncovering even more of who they are, what they do, why, you know, why it's so fun to work with these people. Because when they're telling stories about working with these clients, that becomes even more marketing material. Once you have somebody who's asking you questions to tease all of this out, whether it's through our branding process or through our podcasting service or through your own branding company or your own podcasting service, as long as you're asking yourself these questions, you're not only going to be a better advisor, but you're going to market yourself better, and you're also going to make more money and be more successful.
Absolutely. So we should move on to number three here.
Okay. I love this one. I'm going to tee this up for you a little bit because it's what do you enjoy the most? I know that you absolutely love.
Why don't you just run with this one, man?
Well, okay. Well, I know that you love doing this stuff too. When you're talking about when you get up in the morning, you know, branding and working together and the team that we put in place, it's very enjoyable to work at Top Advisor Marketing. And I feel the same way about podcasting specifically. But you have to ask yourself at least three of these five questions. And the first one is, who do you enjoy working with? It can't just be a number. If it's a number, then you're in the wrong business. It can't just be, I love working with people who have $1 million. No, you don't. You love the $1 million. You don't love the people who have $1 million. The second one is, what do you enjoy working on the most? And Kirk talked about this already. Is that, are you a financial planner? Are you really focused on multi-generational financial decisions? Do you love wills and estates? Do you love real estate? Do you love working with small business owners? What do you enjoy working on the most, and really get super specific on that? And then I think the most important question is why do you enjoy working with them? If you are unable to communicate to me why you love that target market, it's really, truly not your niche. It's not your target market. You're doing it for a different reason, and people will sniff that out. If they don't believe you're being truly genuine, especially if you're trying to work yourself into a niche, then they're going to eat you alive. You're not going to get a good name. You're not going to be, and I'm air quoting, that guy who works with those people, right? You're going to be the schlub who is trying to pitch something to a doctor instead of a person who truly is passionate about helping doctors with blankety blank. Is there anything else here on what you enjoy most, Kirk, that you'd like to add?
That's really good. Yeah, I'd say the next thing you want to do once you've answered those three questions, you want to make sure that they're easy to find and reach. Like if you come up with some obscure niche audience and they're very difficult to reach, and that adds complexity to your business model, you want to think about that. I mean, at the same token, if they're so easy to reach that anybody can reach them and everybody's trying to work with them, then that you'll have to consider that as well. And then the last question is, do you already know some or enough of these people to be able to, I guess, confidently move forward? This is a big struggle for a lot of advisors is, do I have enough? And I've seen advisors who've tried to enter a new marketplace and not be resourceful enough, entrepreneurial enough to go make it happen because they were so scared to move into the new area that they kind of had one foot, you know, in the water, so to speak, or toe in the water, and they couldn't make it happen. So you got to make sure that when you decide that you're going to go there, that you've got enough momentum, you've got enough of a base that you can create momentum, or just be so entrepreneurial, you know, you're just going to go make it happen anyway.
Or
that makes sense.
Or be patient, right?
Heartbeat patients.
Yeah. I mean, if you really truly want to work with a radiological oncologist because you had an experience, a personal experience with yourself or with a loved one, and you just really passionately want to help them make sure that they don't make some of the same mistakes as some of the other ones do, it might take you a little while. The long game is how branding works. Now, Kirk and his team and our team can make it so that you can get this brand up and running rather quickly, but that doesn't mean that you're going to get massive brand traction for a while. And we really haven't talked about that, but it does feed into our final point here, which is big picture sustainability. I think, and you did a great segue into that. So let's talk about sustainability.
Yeah, just to cap off what you said, it was a perfect segue, and I hate when I do this to you, but the thing that the biggest struggle that advisors have with implementing a successful brand is when they don't give it time and they don't own it. And what I mean by own it is they don't make it their world and their life. It's kind of, when it's like a side project, it's like, oh, I'm going to test this brand and see how it goes. And that's a really, I just want to caution you that if you want to dip your toe in the water with a new brand or a better brand, that's not really the best way to do it. You got to be bought in and go for it. Those people unequivocally have the most success, the quickest, they get to success the quickest, but they're also very patient. So that has something to do with sustainability, which is our fourth factor here under, are you brand worthy? And that is that, is your niche and business model sustainable? So can you actually do this? Is there enough of an audience? Is it a good enough opportunity? And can you actually have a business model that you can sustain? So there's four questions that'll help you answer this. And the first one is, does it fit a trend? So where is what you want to do moving, is at the front end of where the industry is moving, right? You definitely don't want to be at the tail end, unless you think there's going to be a big flop, which I don't think happens very often in the history. Everything pretty much is always moving forward. So does it fit a trend? The second question that you want to have an answer to is it going to be lasting? Is what you do going to have lasting value in the marketplace? And can you continue to build on that? And the third one, is it profitable? Can you make enough money off of the way that you want to do business to sustain it and get the life that you want? Because if you can't, you're probably going to, if you're going to pull out, that's not going to be a good thing, right? So you want to be able to stick with it. So is it profitable? And the last one is, can you sell it? And can you sell it as two dimensions to it, or two levels, if you will? Can you sell your new business model and your value proposition to the clients that most want it? So this kind of goes back to one of the very first questions we asked was, does what you're great at and what you want to build resonate with the people you want to do it with? You know, and are those people the people that you actually enjoy working with and doing what you do enjoy most and fulfills your why? All those things, these things are all so connected to this big picture, which is a huge trend in the way humans want to pursue making a living their life, which is for it to be more meaningful, to be more enjoyable. Because the other alternative, which I think we've spent too many years, too many decades, some would argue maybe centuries pursuing, could be better. So we're getting very philosophical there. So can you sell it to the clients? And the other one is, could you sell your new business and your brand? Could you sell it to potential buyers?
You know,
are you,
Kirk,
building something you can sell to others?
I really upset the thought leaders in the mergers and acquisitions space when it came to valuations of the business. Mm-hmm. This was a number of years ago. Because I had asked the pivotal question, are you going to value a company that, and there's two different things here. One, with aging clients who are consistently taking withdrawals versus people who are putting deposits in, right? So I personally think there should be a valuation difference there. But the other thing is, if you have a niche and it's a very, very clear and succinct, and you have marketing material surrounding that, and you're consistently getting leads from that niche, I'm going to pay you more than 2x revenue. Because I know that it's plug and play, right? I know that the loss of clients from a generalist is going to be much higher than a specialist when it comes to mergers and acquisitions. This is something that just absolutely floors me, that advisors, you know, when they're resistant to specialization, specialization is how you're going to get a higher multiple. You're going to get a higher retention level. You're going to get better job satisfaction. Your marketing is going to be a lot clearer. I mean, there's all sorts of different pieces, parts to this. So what else do you have to add with Can You Sell It?
It was really those two things. Can you sell it to, okay. Can you sell the concept of what, where your strengths are in your to your ideal audience? And you know, for a sustainable period of time, is it, if it's something that's just important this year because of an election or a world crisis or global crisis or something, you know, maybe that's not sustainable, but is it sustainable that, you know, the story that you can sell to clients? And the second one is our buyers, what you just alluded mm-hmm. to, are buyers going to be interested in what you're building, and will somebody actually want to buy it? You may not care. I don't know too many business owners who wouldn't care. But there may be businesses, you know, I'm hand this off to my kid and he's going to hand it off to his kid. And we're just going to love doing this for the rest of our life and for generations. And who cares? But I doubt that's many people that wouldn't care about that.
You know, I want to add one more to sustainability, which is, can you service it? You know, I have people who you really want to put themselves out as these unbelievable, you know, comprehensive financial planners. But they don't have the infrastructure to service it, right? They either don't have the right software, they don't have the education in the software, they can't really provide it, or, you know, they're treating their employees so poorly that one of them, a key employee, leaves, and all of a sudden your whole service matrix is blown. And so I'm going to practice management this real quick, and then I'm going to wrap myself up, and I'd love to hear your closing thoughts. But the best thing about having a great brand and understanding if you're brand worthy, it's easier to hire and retain the right people. I have an office that he's now a personal friend of mine down in Louisiana. And because his brand is so clear and so succinct, even in times that his team has to work harder, work extra hours, you know, just put in that extra oomph, it's because they believe so strongly in what they do that they stick with it. In fact, he's had people actively reach out to him and say, I would like to work for you because of your brand. There are so many levels that branding can help with. And when you go through a proven process to really have that brand come out, have it sing, have it dance, have it do everything that you could ever want a brand to do for you, it not only changes. And Kirk, we talk about this, you know, you're going to have more fun. You're going to have an easier time marketing. You're going to make more money, and you're going to retain people even more because they're going to hire to a brand instead of hire to a job.
Some people don't even care about the money as much. I know most people do, but some advisors that we work with, they're okay to take to make around the same amount of money. They just want to work a lot less to get there.
Right.
And have it be more fun. Mm-hmm. So it's not, you know, it's not always about the money. Although, yeah.
Well, all right. Closing thoughts. Closing thoughts on, are you brand worthy?
I think look at this from a perspective of what is risky, more risky going forward in your career. And that is it more risky to say, look, I got to become more brand worthy. I got to pursue a brand and a niche, and I got to go after this. Is that more of a risk to go after it, or to not embrace going after it and becoming brand worthy and creating their brand? And I think for most advisors these days, the risk is the status quo, or not moving forward quickly enough and not being clear about who you want to work with and who you are. I think there's a massive risk there. But you need to be able to figure that out for yourself, because I can't answer questions for you in your practice, nor can Matt. We can try to convince you, but we can't answer those questions for you. And I think it's the risk is what I would look at. I'd seriously think about that.
Yeah. Well, Kirk, man, thanks for enlightening us on this. We haven't talked about branding in a while. I always love having the opportunity to pick your brain, because even though that we work together every day, you know, when we do this, I always feel like I learn even more. And as you know, I'm kind of a geek when it comes to stuff like that.
Yeah. I don't think you're a geek, Matt.
I don't know. We had a conversation about that a little earlier about how geeky I am. I actually even sent you a picture, dude, but I appreciate that. I really do.
We had an interesting conversation today about how people think that somebody there's certain things people embrace and they're called a geek, and certain things that seem way more geeky because they have way less life relevance and it's more cool, like sports.
Yeah.
Why aren't people who are, they're called fanatics, But Fanatic seems to have much more, seems to be more positive than Geek.
Yeah.
Geek is more acceptable, but like some of the people that I know in hockey, they're crazy.
You were
I managed my son's hockey team, and I was showing you the coaches. They're incredibly dedicated.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's like madness. They're like watching other hockey games, scouting reports, and it's like, oh my gosh. I mean, it's, you know, it's high competitive hockey, but it's still funny. And then, you know, somebody who goes to Comic-Con, is they're a geek. Well, no, the sports guys are geeks anyway. Yeah. We're way
This is totally relevant to are you brand worthy, because the big picture question is, you know, how geeky are you about what you do, and how fascinated, how fanatical are you about what you do and why you do it? I know exactly why I love going to, you know, comic book conventions with my kids, and I know you know exactly why you love watching hockey. This is no difference. You should have the same level of passion for your business as you do for your hobbies. And if you don't, we're on this planet for a really short period of time, and living it in an environment that you don't like, or doing something that you really don't enjoy, man, I just think you should ask yourself and look yourself in the mirror and say, not only am I brand worthy, but is what I'm doing fulfilling? Is what I'm doing something I really love? And Kirk, 9 times out of 10, the people that we have coming through the Top Advisor Marketing Branding and Brand Foundation, they do have that. And you can hear it in their voice through the sales process and through your discovery process that they freaking love what they do.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right.
That's the biggest thing.
So if you have not subscribed to the podcast yet, which we're like, I don't know, 120 episodes in. If you haven't subscribed yet, what the heck are you doing? Just freaking subscribe, will you? And then number two, if you know somebody who needs to ask themselves, are they brand worthy or not, then make sure that you click that share button below. And if you are trying to plan for your 2019, if you're trying to plan for the future of your business and you're thinking to yourself, you know, I was able to answer a lot of those questions, but I don't think the way that my company faces the public explains who I am, what I do, and what makes me unique and different. And of course, why should you care as a prospective client? You need to give us a call at Top Advisor Marketing. You need to work with Kirk's team, and you need to try to figure out how you can truly become brand worthy so that you can get your thought leadership out there and change the financial services industry. So for everybody at Top Advisor Marketing, this is Matt Halloran, the host of the Top Advisor Marketing Podcast, and we'll see you on the other side of the mic very soon.
Are you ready to change the way you communicate with your clients? Are you tired of being the best kept secret in your area? Learn how to become a prolific online influencer, attract more ideal clients, and grow your business. Contact us today and see what the power of podcasting can do for your business. Click on the Contact Us link on our website at topadvisormarketing.com and set up a call to learn more. Follow us on LinkedIn and Facebook for more updates and information.
This was brought to you by Iris.xyz, a platform helping financial professionals become better in business and life through new media and new voices. Visit them and learn more at Iris.xyz.